I'm Ryan.
I'm Julia.
And together we are Functionally
Literate.
Functionally Literate, the book club podcast. We are currently in the midst of reading The Fifth Season by N.K. Jemisin. It's a really cool science fantasy book, which means the science is fairly realistic. Like, she did her research about earthquakes.
She did.
You know, she did her research about, like, how that stuff happens. And the fantasy is peppered throughout. Like, there's not a ton of different magical things.
We get a little nugget here or there.
The fantasy is magical.
Yeah.
But there's just not a lot of it. The fantasy is the origins, which there's a lot of origins.
Right.
There was one fantastical creature in the last episode.
That was exciting.
What was that thing called again?
I don't know. It was not a dog, but it's a pet.
I think it was a Kirkusa.
Kirkusa.
Yeah. Anyways.
Thank your people.
Oh, yeah. Fuck. I gotta thank my people. Hey. Thank you. Thank you, Julia.
Thank you for being here, Ryan.
Yeah. This has been a fun book. Hey, I should ask. Do you want to keep doing this after this book?
Yeah, I would do another one.
Awesome. What book do you want to do? Do you want to like continue this series or something else?
Oh, my God. Let me get on Goodreads and let you know.
Sure. Absolutely. Thank you, Chris, our sound guy. He does a great job. Thank you, VidWest Studios. We record this there, and we use their equipment. And so, you know, if you like how this sounds, it's because we got a great studio and we got a great audio recordist. Thank you, Chris. Also, you know, I edit it, so, you know,
that helps. Thank you, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks, Julia. Appreciate it. I love being thanked. And thank you, Jake Weller, for our music. If you like our music, you should listen to his album, Wasting Time, which served as inspiration for our intro and outro. So if you listen to that album, you will probably be able to pick out the songs that that those came from. It's fun. Have you listened to it, Julia?
No.
You should.
I will.
Okay. Cool.
I'll sing a little bit later. Just kidding.
Have you been, Julia?
I've been great. How have you been?
I feel like how I am is too big of a question, and you should ask a more specific one.
What is something that made you laugh today?
Something that made me laugh today. We played D&D earlier, and man, some crazy stuff happened in D&D earlier. Like, our sound guy, Chris, man, he just did some way out of character stuff, and it was great.
Wow, like, okay.
Man, he lied for the first time because other party members lie.
Wow.
And he just, like, started doing a bunch of violent shit because everybody else does a bunch of violent shit.
And it's D&D, not real life, so you can do that.
I said that.
Yeah.
Indeed. And, man, it was funny.
Just a dust in the wind.
That made me laugh today.
Good.
Yeah. The bad influences. we are all terrible influences. Like, I mean, Dr. Glow lies and the Don break shit and... Man, and I'm like, man, Dr. Glow does not lie on the reg.
You're in your villain era. Good.
He's in his villain era because the rest of us, except for the princess, is on their villain eras.
Okay.
It's a lot. It's existential. Well, meanwhile, let's get to this other existential thing.
Let's do it.
The fifth season. Because the world ended in the prologue.
Yeah.
Gosh. Chapter 12. Cyanide finds a new toy, but not before she puts the deputy governor in her place. So yeah, Cyanide finds a new toy. I love that chapter title.
Yeah, especially with what she finds.
Yeah.
You could call it a toy, I guess.
So there's, much like the last chapter, there's really two parts to this chapter.
Yeah.
There's this fucking horrible conversation that Cyanide has to have with the deputy governor. But she winds up putting the deputy governor in her place.
She does.
She does And then the second part is she finds her new toy.
We could call it that again. Maybe a stretch, but...
Yeah. So, the way that it starts is... Cyanide is... No, do you want to go ahead? You want to tell it?
I was going to say Alabaster is recovering.
Yeah, he's not well.
Yeah, he was poisoned.
Indeed.
And so now Cyanide is like, oh, great, I got to go do this shit by myself, basically.
Yeah.
Because he's got to stay back and he's got to rest.
He's ill.
So she goes, she talks to that really mean woman.
Asael.
Asael, okay. Asael. And,
Conversation, man. Like, anyways, go ahead.
No, I mean, she's just mean. And she calls her Araga. During this conversation, right?
Yeah.
Which is a slur.
And it was after Cyanide spelled out, like explicitly spelled out to her, like all of the reasons why, like, she was conducting herself the way she was conducting herself. She was she had to explain to this woman, you are being mad disrespectful.
Yeah.
You were being mad disrespectful. You won't look me in the eye. You still haven't offered me a cup of safe that Alabaster suggested yesterday. You are... What else does she say? She says... Oh, right, because this woman accuses her of refusing to help out of a fit of pique. Because Cyanide follows up on that shit from yesterday where she's like, I noticed the deputy governor is not here. I noticed the governor is not here. And then the deputy governor, which S.I.L. is like, unfortunately, the governor is very busy. Like, he's still very busy. And she's like, then I'm too busy for this.
Yeah.
And she's like, the lady's like, really? You're going to not do your job? And she's like, oh, no, I will. Just the contract doesn't stipulate how long it has to take me to do that.
And she's like, kind of going she's out on a limb there.
Totally
BS,
and she has no idea.
I didn't read that contract.
But Alabaster's right. She is a pedantic minor bureaucrat that is not important enough to have actually read the contract.
No one in that room read the contract. So she can say that shit.
So she's like, so yeah, I'm going to go back to my hotel and I'm just going to hang out here in the city until I can meet the governor.
And she's like, okay. And so she's like, wait.
But before she does that, she's like, wait a minute, really? You're gonna like you're just gonna not do your job out of a fit of pique, which I had to look up what that meant. I've never heard that word.
And
have you heard that word?
No, I just said, all right then.
So basically, so what it means is like, you know, I'm gonna pull up the definition again, but I'm pretty sure it means like being slighted. It means a feeling of irritation or resentment resulting from a slight, especially to one's pride. And she's like, it's not a fit of pique. I am being straight up disrespected by you. She's like, you won't look us in the eye. You won't shake our hands. You still haven't offered me a cup of safe like Alabaster suggested yesterday. And we haven't met with the governor for a very, very important job that will affect your entire city. Like, would you treat any other, like, important member of an organization like that? Like, would you treat the union strongback leader of your own comm like that?
Mm-mm.
And she's just like, this woman is just not reacting at first, just like she's processing, like the gears are turning, and she's like, what, you want an apology? And then she gives like the shittiest fucking apology.
It's not an apology.
She's like and Cyanide has the best response to it too. She's like, that is a shitty apology.
Yeah, discomfort.
Sorry, do you want to say the quote?
Well, I was going to say discomfort is understandable. It's the rudeness that isn't.
Yeah, because her apology is like, you could understand, like, why would we would be why we would be uncomfortable with you being here. Mm-hmm. Like, right? Like, you are who you are.
We don't ever interact, ever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and You're right. She does say, she goes, and that's a really shitty apology. I'm sorry you're so abnormal that I can't manage to treat you like a human being.
You're a Raga.
Ugh.
Now, everyone, let's substitute Raga with a word that I won't say that starts with an N.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening here, right? Like, could you imagine that conversation where a black person is being straight up disrespected and has to explain to the white person why they are being disrespected? And that white person gives the shittiest fucking apology. And then the black person is like, sorry that I'm rude. Because my skin color is different, like, you can't treat me like a human being. And they respond with, you're an...
It's horrible.
Exactly.
And just... racist.
Straight up.
Yeah.
Straight up. Now, that said, this is, like, it's a metaphor. Mm-hmm. It's important to keep it a metaphor, because... this is a very different situation, even though the conversation is the same.
Right.
This, I mean, Cyanide and Alabaster are both incredibly dangerous people.
Powerful.
Very powerful people and dangerous because of it. And that's also kind of what it comes down to, is that, like, you know, we would treat aliens like this, straight up. Like, that's just, they're like, maybe that's just the cynic in me, but I feel like, you know, human beings would treat aliens like this, that were, like, capable of space travel.
Right.
Like, not all of us, but some of us, certainly.
They'd be scared.
Mm-hmm. And so they would...
different than you. Don't understand it.
And
so
that fear would lead to hate.
Yep. Yeah.
And so she's like, I'm gonna fucking go stay at the Season's End. Down the two blocks from here. That's what I'm going to do. And you're going to pay for it.
And I'm going to get a steak. No, I'm just kidding.
And so she's like, I'm going to go talk to the governor.
Yeah.
And Cyanide's like, hey, yeah, you go do that. And then the governor doesn't come back.
No.
The lieutenant governor comes back. Yeah. Who is far more important than the deputy governor, clearly. Because you know who has read the contract? The lieutenant governor.
Unfortunately.
Her name is Harris Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And she is great. Because you know what she does? She shakes Cyanide's hand.
Yeah.
First thing, she holds her hand out.
And apologizes.
And apologizes and explains why the governor is too busy.
But doesn't...
Or, wait, actually, does she explain why? No, she says, I'm sorry, the governor genuinely is very busy.
Mm-hmm.
Genuinely. But... like, you know, I, would you like a cup of safe? You know, she's like, no.
That shit's gross. I don't want a cup of safe.
And, no, she's like, I don't really like the taste of safe. And then, like, Harris Smith is like, no one likes the taste of safe.
Mm-hmm.
And she smiles. And then she offers up Asael to be a tour guide. But you like a tour of the city while you're here. And she's very tempted to take Harris Smith up on that offer, and she says, no, I would actually much rather go down to the pier and see and assess the problem.
See what's going on.
And she sees at, like, just the slightest flinch of relief from Asael for not having to. And then, so yeah, they go, and then Harris Smith is, like, going with her and is like, you're going to come with? And she's like, I mean, it would be only proper. You're here for a very important job. And Cyanide's like, oh, I like this one. She's a keeper.
Yeah.
It's like, nice. Wow, look at that basic respect and decency.
Imagine.
That's all she wanted.
Right, exactly.
That's all she fucking wanted. And she loves this woman because of it.
Yeah.
Because now she gets it. Because she was fucking pissed this entire conversation.
Mm-hmm.
She was getting madder and madder and madder and not allowed to show it, which I think is very accurate to reality.
Yes.
You know?
You're totally right.
Like, I'm thinking of my boss, right? Mm-hmm. My boss, so she's a black woman. She's older. She's retired from the police department, right? Mm-hmm. She is the head of safety and security. And literally yesterday, Like, so we've had a lot of turnover at work.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, we were off for the summer, and so there was a lot of people that quit and a lot of new people that have been hired. And so we're all starting back at work. And so there's, you know, there's these people, they don't know what they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so she has to have some conversations that where she's got to establish boundaries.
Sure.
Right? And she's a little feeling a little hesitant about it. She's like, I got to find the right moment because, you know, she acknowledged it. She's like, you know, I'm an assertive black woman.
Mm-hmm.
And some people will view my assertiveness as aggression. It's like, right. Yeah. I was like, yeah, that's true. I'm like, you know, like I wanted to argue, but, you know, I just can't.
It's sad.
She's right.
And if it's like a white man, that was
there is
asserting.
There is one white man that she has to establish boundaries with.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, and if a white man were to, like, be in that position that she's in and, like, you know, be assertive in that way.
Yeah.
People wouldn't even think about it for a second.
Probably. Like, yeah. But anyways. This book hits home.
I know it does.
You know,
you can't read it and not like just see the parallels in the world around you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because like, you know, she baked those parallels in. That's totally
yeah,
on purpose.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, so that's when we get into the second half of this chapter, right? They go down to the dock. We skip over that. It just starts with Cyan like, it's not the coral. The coral's not the problem
there
here.
There is some shit down there, and I don't know what it is, but it is not the coral.
And I think the best move is to do nothing.
Yeah. She's like, I'll remove that. You're going to have a problem in about.
And yeah, they talk over their options. So yeah. Like their options were like, I can destroy the coral.
Mm-hmm.
And you might not have a problem for another 100 years. Because she explains the problem, right? Like, so first she's like, hold on, let me assess. And she has to, like, make a show of it,
mm-hmm.
which I think is funny. Because, like, you know, like, she doesn't need to make a show of it to use her powers.
Yeah.
She just, like, it's like, do you need to make a show of it to listen? No,
mm-mm.
You don't. So, but she start, you know, she does a bunch of hand wavy motions while she's like sessing, and it's like there's a big oblong, I don't know what the fuck it is, under the water and under the silt and the
coral.
Mm-hmm. Like there's just and it the, whatever this thing is, it has effectively raised the seabed. It is made in the middle of the harbor, shallow water, where, like, all of these dead creatures are forming, and then, like, live coral on top.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, she understands why she was sent out here, because she could totally destroy this coral. But she explains to them that if I do that, it'll just grow back in about a century.
Right.
Right? And so they're like, okay, well, then get the thing out of there. And she's like, no, that's a terrible idea. I don't know what the fuck it is. It could be oil. It could be, like, sulfur. It could be, you know, it could be a giant gas pocket.
Yeah.
Like, it could kill us all. But she knows it's not those things because she could sense those things if they were present.
Right.
But she doesn't say that out loud. She's just like, I don't know what it is, so it's a bad idea. And then they're like, okay, well, then destroy the coral. But they're like, they talk about like why that's a bad idea, because like in a century they will still be paying off the fulcrum for this job.
That's what was interesting too, is I don't know if up to this point I had realized like the relationship that the different comms have with the fulcrum, mm-hmm. and like how they get them to, you know, do work for them like this. And I'm like, oh, they're like not working together. These are like totally separate like things.
Yeah,
it's not like they don't work together as like a community.
But, well, I mean, that's where unions come into it, right?
Right.
Like there's unions for every single organization,
mm-hmm.
right? Like she's like, you should get like a geomast out here or something.
Right.
She says you should get a geomast out here and like have them do a survey, and they're like, those guys are practically as expensive as you guys are.
Like, we literally can't afford anything.
We literally, like, wanted to get you out here to clear out the coral. And she's like, I can do that. But then, like, the lieutenant governor is like, but we'll still be paying off this job in a century. We can't, like, call you back out here in a century to fix it.
Right.
And so she's like, I mean, I could do nothing. And they're like, what? She's like, if I don't do anything, we'll be in breach of contract and the Fulcrum will have to pay you back. Mm-hmm. Like, they'll have to, like give up whatever money they're getting out of this.
Right.
And the lieutenant governor is very appreciative of what she's saying, right? She's like, because she recognizes, like,
she's not trying to bullshit her. She's not going to just, like, remove the coral and be like, all right, peace. Like
who the fuck would say that? Because Cyanide would be in so much fucking trouble if she didn't do the job.
Right.
Like, straight up. She would, like, she would probably, like, she was worrying about at the beginning of this book, wind up being a breeder for the rest of her
life.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
I like Cyanide's solution to all of this.
Yeah.
She's like, just move.
Just move.
What if you all packed up and just left?
Just move away. You don't have to live here. You could move. But, like, that actually logistically has a lot of problems, which, much like real life, wouldn't work, right? She recognizes that anyone that's poor wouldn't be able to do this.
The infrastructure that they have built, that's wealth.
All of that
it.
Would be lost.
Mm-hmm.
And also that any family that had a origine child, well, they say Raga child. Should we just say Raga?
We can go back and forth.
Because there was this interesting shift in chapter 8 where, like, after she went to the node maintainer station, she was like, we really are just Raga. Like, all of the everything else here is just bullshit.
Yeah.
But, like, then I also think, I mean, I would never say the N-word. Right. Ever.
But also, this is in, I don't know. I think that in another chapter, it brings up, like, maybe
I shouldn't just cavalierly say this word.
Well, maybe, but also I think that, I don't know, like,
hey,
do you know what I'm talking about?
Hey, audience, I'm gonna throw this question out to the audience. What do you think? Do you think it's okay for us to say Raga just casually, or should we stick with origine? Right.
Yeah.
Well, anyways,
I said the R word earlier. That's how I referred to it.
Raga?
Yeah.
The R word? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, what do you think, audience? I'm going to put that. That's going to be a Q&A in the Spotify episode. Yeah. But yeah, and then there was the other issue, though, was any family that had an origine child, they would be basically ostracized. They wouldn't have, nobody would accept them if they tried to move. So, while it's a nice idea to just move, no, that won't work.
They're like, we're not doing it.
And so, like, finally, what's her face? Asael. She fucking just says some fucking smarmy shit. Like, like, she questions if she can even do it. And she's... And she's finally, she's just had enough of it. It's just, she's just done. She's like, yeah, I can do it. And she turns around and she's like, you might want to move in the next 10 seconds.
And then she
fucking does it.
Yep.
She just starts, like, shifting all of the earth and pushing the earth under it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it, but then, like, once she starts moving it.
It's darkness.
Mm-hmm.
She feels...
She gets sucked in.
To the power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then she realizes that this is related to what Alabaster did to her before.
Yeah.
Like, this feels like what happened when Alabaster, like, took control of me. But she's in control. Kind of. She can't stop it because she's, like, taking in so much power from this thing that she's moving.
Mm-hmm.
If she stops what she's doing, which is moving the thing up and out of the earth, then, like, she would wind up icing the entire city.
Yeah. But it starts going up on its own.
And after a certain point, all the power leaves her, and then, like the ground starts to shake, like the quake alarms start going off and everybody's fucking running. Like, she comes back into herself and she's like worried about looking weak in front of these people.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't matter because all these people have fucking run away. Right. Like, nobody would think she's weak because the ground's fucking shaking. And then like salt water splashes over her face and this thing shoots up into the air. And what is it?
An obelisk.
It's a fucking obelisk in the ground.
It's crazy. It's, but there's something special about this obelisk, isn't there?
It's a damaged obelisk.
And?
There's a fucking stone eater in it.
What you doing in there?
And it's dead.
Yep.
And that's how the chapter ends. Like, pointing out that this stone eater is in here. And Cyanide has to accept it. She sees it. And that's why the obelisk is damaged, because it's in the center of the damage.
Yeah.
Like, the stone eater was thrown at it. And there it is. And it's dead. And I still think obelisks are stone eaters. I don't care if a little stone eater hit this big stone eater. That I think they're both stone eaters.
They're you think that's two stone eaters.
I think, yeah.
I think you could be right.
Maybe. I don't know. But that was like one of the cooler chapters for me. Like, the way it ended.
Loved
I was like,
it.
That is so fucking interesting. Yeah. Like, what is that doing down there?
Yeah.
What's up with that?
And then it's just, I don't know.
And then it's just chilling over the harbor, just floating up there.
It felt very cinematic.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah.
It did. Like, man, I'm telling you, like, we're just talking about it. We don't do it justice, though. It's so poetic, the way this woman writes. It's so good. This is an ad.
It sure is.
We don't have sponsors, so I'm going to tell you what is not sponsoring this episode. This episode is not sponsored by Clyde's Caramel Cream Caramel Vanilla Ale. That is not what this ad is sponsored by. It's ale. The caramel makes it still bitter, but sweet.
It's like cream soda.
It's cream soda. It's alcoholic cream soda.
And it's delicious.
I can taste the caramel.
Absolutely. Notes of caramel. Notes of Clyde, the cat.
Oh, I love it. I love the... Okay, so this is a local brand. It was, like, canned here in Colombia, which is where we live. It's a little cat, little black cat with a top hat and a monocle.
It's perfect.
Anyways.
It's Clyde.
This spot could one day be replaced by a sponsor. I'm totally just putting that out there. Would love to advertise for you, whoever you are.
You put it into the universe, it'll happen.
You can email me at funk.lit.pod@gmail.com. That is func.lit.pod@gmail.com. You could also be a patron of this podcast. That's right. This podcast, Functionally Literate, we're going places. We have a Patreon now. You can give me $1, and in exchange, you will be able to listen to this podcast ad-free. That means right now, you don't have to listen to this bit. You can listen to the podcast uninterrupted. It just goes without me going on about things that you don't care about, just for $1. And that will increase in value every 2 weeks, because there will be another ad-free episode. And then when I do get sponsors, you'll still benefit. Because then it'll be even more annoying ads where I have sponsors. Who wants to listen to ads? I'm making this real annoying on purpose. I'm going to move on now.
I'm sold. I'm signing up.
If you would like to, additionally, if you'd like to just pitch a little money my way, like you're not interested in being a patron, you can... go to my PayPal, which is also in there. I made a Funklit PayPal.
Love that.
It'll all be in the description. Links, all the links in the description. Yeah, anyways, it has an ending passage from Tablet 2, The Incomplete Truth. Verse 2. Father Earth thinks in ages, but he never, ever sleeps, nor does he forget. That shit's fucking scary.
Deep.
That kind of reminds me of Santa Claus, though.
Yeah, that's what he's always watching. He knows when you're asleep.
He knows when you are sleeping. He knows when you are awake. You don't think that shit's creepy?
It is weird.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Father Earth is the same as Santa Claus.
Father Earth is very old. He thinks in ages.
Yeah.
So, like, if something happened 2 years ago, like, you'd be like, that was, like, 2 seconds ago. What are you, you're at, like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right, right. That's crazy to think about.
Yeah. Anyways, on to chapter 13.
You're on the trail. The trail is getting harder to follow.
So, this woman that has no name now has a name.
Mm-hmm.
And her name is Tonky.
I love Tonky. I'm telling you, this trio right here,
mm-hmm.
I'd lay it all on the line for them.
So yeah, like the first few pages of this chapter is really it's about Tonky. Like, we're pretty sure that she was a geomast. Like, she is adamantly denying it, but like, go ahead, I interrupted.
Doesn't she admit it, kind of?
She
now?
She says that she did something that made him real mad, I think.
Yeah, so it maybe she was, like, in school.
Mm-hmm.
She pissed off the bureaucracy or whatever.
Do you know what I liken her to?
What?
I liken her to an amateur chemist, like a chemistry undergrad, right?
Okay.
Like someone that knows just enough to be fucking dangerous.
Love that. Yeah, she's great.
It's like, yeah, I could totally make math. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's so good.
Anyway,
she takes us home,
which her home is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It is called a vesicle.
A cave,
solidified,
right?
Lava bubble.
Yeah. Oh.
So it's like, imagine like a giant fucking bubble of lava formed and then it cooled,
mm-hmm.
right? And then it partially collapsed. But because it's stone now, she's just in this big ass cavern in the middle of nowhere. And she says, don't go around the back. There's wild animals back there. And we're like, we don't want to go back there. And the place fucking stinks as bad as she does.
Yeah, she's filthy. She needs a bath.
And and then she just unabashedly starts bathing. And we discover what exciting fact about Tonky?
She's a trans queen.
She is.
Yeah.
Like, we are surprised to see that she has a penis, but she doesn't give a fuck that she has a penis. And we're like, well, it's not like she's going to be a breeder.
Right.
she fucking just stinks.
Yeah, she's stinky. But that, you know, she's taking a shower or a bath.
She's bathing.
So
she's getting,
like,
clean.
Thank God.
And then, like, she starts, like, scrubbing herself in this green stuff that that Tonky says is to deal with fungal issues. And we're like, I don't know about that, but all
yikes.
Right. But, like, the nice thing, though, is despite how gross this stuff she's rubbing all over herself is, her putting it on takes care of the smell and also makes the whole place smell nicer.
Yeah.
And so they sleep there.
And she was, we are a little worried. We talk about, like, lice being an issue at one point, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And
very,
just,
like, a bit concerned about that.
Because they sleep on the floor, right?
Yeah. They sleep on the floor, and they're worried about lice. Mm-hmm. And Hoa kind of cozies up to her.
Aww.
And she's like, don't fucking touch me. And he doesn't. She doesn't say, don't fucking touch me. But she's like, I really hope he doesn't, like touch me. I don't want that.
I love Hoa.
And he doesn't snuggle. He just, like, kind of sleeps close to her.
Yeah, he just wants to be close.
So yeah, we then start traveling south, and we travel south for weeks,
mm-hmm.
meeting more displaced people on the way, and man, like, it really does paint a picture, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, about this, these people, like, they get into, like, how some of these people are, like, they're starting to transition into clothes that are better for survival, but they all have some kind of trinket, right? And then we realize, shit, we don't have a trinket, and we should probably get one because all of these people might realize we didn't used to be rich.
Right.
Like, fucking think about that.
That's crazy.
Like, it doesn't fucking matter now. It doesn't fucking matter now. The world is ending. The season has started. And
everything's
you all,
covered in ash.
Everybody's like, covered in ash. Everybody's wearing masks now because the ash is falling now.
Yeah.
But everybody has these little, like, at least one, a little trinket of before the fifth season started to show, hey, I used to be rich.
I'm not poor like I'm these other people.
I'm not poor.
It's ridiculous.
It's messed up. And... well, anyways.
Well, and the numbers, like, the people that they're seeing, it's, like, getting less and less as they go.
Right. And we, if I remember correctly, we logic away the reasoning as more people are reaching their homes or reaching places they're content with staying.
Right.
But they aren't doing that because we're finding our fucking daughter and we're on a mission.
Yeah.
In case you guys have forgotten, we're trying to fucking kill our husband because he's a dick that killed our son.
And
fuck
he needs
him.
To die. Yeah.
Gotta kill him. Well, so, and literally. Hoa, bless this boy, can sense where our daughter is. But.
It's getting a little bit more difficult.
It's getting more difficult.
Yeah.
And. It takes a few weeks for him to get into why it's getting more difficult. Like, it isn't until after, like, they come to a fork in the road and Hoa spends a good 5 minutes trying to figure out when before he just knew.
Yeah, he's like this way. But now he's like, ooh, I don't know.
And then we're like, is it – we ask a question about sessing. And he's like, that's not what I'm doing. It's not sessing.
Yeah,
it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting. It's like, well, then how does it work? What is it? And then he uses a metaphor, which I think is interesting, right? Because, like, when they're talking about their powers, they have to use metaphor. They got into this earlier with Alabaster, right? Like, he was trying to explain something to Cyanite that he just couldn't because she wasn't, like, he didn't have the words for it.
Yeah, and she, it's like, you can't explain it unless you experience it.
Right.
Like... yeah.
Which I think makes sense. I mean, it's like trying to explain to a blind person what a certain color looks like, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, like, completely blind, not like, I mean, you know, there's varying levels of blindness. I mean, like, just imagine you never had eyes and it's like trying to explain colors to someone. You just couldn't, you know? Or trying to explain the nuances of music to a deaf person.
Right. It's a power that you have, something you never experienced before. So, like,
yeah.
It's lost.
You know what my power is?
What's that?
I always know where north is.
Do you really?
I do. Boink. I'm kidding. It's not a power. North is that way.
Wow. How do you, I still go left, right, like put my fingers out.
You know how I know? Huh. Because I knew which direction the building was facing when I entered it.
Okay.
It was the north-facing side, so I know north is that way. And I know which way north is because I live here, 63 North, I point that way. And so I just keep track of where north is so I know where my cardinal directions are. Trust me, I'm useless after I fly.
Okay.
After I fly, I'm like, I don't fucking know which way is north. I gotta look at the sun first.
You're using the highways as reference.
I'm using the highways as reference, but, I mean, you could also use the sun as reference. Like, just, you know, like, if I was, like, plopped in the middle of nowhere, I would know the sun rises in the east, sinks in the west.
Sure.
So then I would be like, okay, that way is north. And then I would just know that. I would just, like, I don't know, like, part of... like, subconsciously, like, because I trained my brain to do it. It's a Boy Scout thing, I think. I just, there's a part of my mind that just thinks about where north is without putting much effort into it.
Well, shit.
Yeah.
That's a cool skill to have, especially if you ever get lost. If you were on this journey,
it would.
You could be
I would be useless because we wouldn't see the sky. Like, I think
ash everywhere. You don't know it. They're like, who's this guy? Let's drop him.
Is it in this chapter that happens or the next chapter where we become Aesun where they sell their compass?
No, I think it's this chapter because they sell.
Yeah, they said because they're
like we and they're like we don't need the compass. We have something better.
Hoa.
Hoa. Yeah. Well,
she we think that to ourselves.
Right.
We've got Hoa. It's fine. And Tonki says there's other ways of tracking cardinal directions.
Tonki's like literally not even worried about giving this compass away.
Yeah.
Like Aesun, like we were like, what are we doing? And we like, also okay. get We've screwed over in the deal too. We get like two pairs of shoes. We should have gotten several.
Yeah. And Tonki already has a spare pair of boots.
Uh-huh.
She's like, it's fine. She trades away her compass so those two can get boots, which is very nice of Tonki.
I love Tonki.
She's great.
Yeah.
She's rough around the edges.
Yeah, but that makes me love her even more, you know? Honestly.
So, anyways, getting back to the conversation we were having with Hoa.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I don't sess. That's not what I'm doing. And then he uses a metaphor about lights. He's like, it's like Ness. I forgot her name. It's N-E-S-S.
Nessen?
Is it Nessen?
I don't know.
Nessum?
You're the audiobook. Starts with an N. Just spell it. Nessun.
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 Nessun. Yeah. He says, Nessun is like a light that I can see. But she's getting a lot closer. There's so many of you where she's going.
Yeah, so we can start to be like, why is there a congregation
of origins?
Yeah.
Like, there's not a fulcrum here.
It's a little weird. We're not sure. But we're going to follow that because we think that maybe
that's where our daughter is.
Yeah, and our filthy, stupid, dumbass husband. Sorry.
Because correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he says that if she goes further south from there, they'd be able to pick up her trail again.
Right. I think that this is just like a big block.
There's so much light. Yeah. It's like if we saw a firefly fly into the sun. That's not the analogy he used, but that's what I thought of when he was explaining his powers.
No, that's a great analogy. It's like you're like, it could be anywhere in there.
I don't fucking know.
Yeah. No, that's a great analogy for it.
And
it's nearby soon.
Mm-hmm. And so we're like, all right, let's get going. And they have this conversation. We make a point of not having this conversation until Tonki's off doing something on her own.
Yeah.
And so then she comes back and she's irritable because, and I thought this was interesting. Like, they don't explain it this way, but the reason why Tonki is irritable is because she is a trans woman.
Yeah.
And she would, in the earlier weeks of their travels, she would, when she thought nobody else was paying attention, drink a potion. And now that potion is gone.
Right.
And since then, she started growing a beard.
Yeah.
Like, she started having a little bit of facial hair. And she's just been more irritable lately. And it's like, well, someone that stopped taking their estrogen would be a bit irritable, wouldn't they?
Yes, 100%.
And so, I just thought that was, I love this book. I really do.
It's so great to have, like, something that is fantasy, but, like, still rooted in reality.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, anyway, so they decide to keep going south, basically. Like, that's how the chapter basically ends, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
They're like, let's go.
Let's go. And then there's an ending passage. Tablet 1, on survival, verse 9. Judge all by their usefulness, the leaders and the hardy, the fecund and the crafty, the wise and the deadly, and a few strong backs to guard them all. That's kind of bleak, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Like, if you're not useful, like, if we can't find a way for you to be useful, then you're useless.
I want to think that everybody has a superhero or a superpower.
Yeah.
Not in this world, too. Maybe.
Chapter 14. Cyanide breaks her toys. but not before going on a pleasant stroll and seeing an attractive man at the pier.
I think I love the juxtaposition, right? Like, Cyanide finds a new toy. Cyanide breaks that toy.
And she...
This is an interesting chapter, right?
Yeah.
You're right. It does feel very cinematic, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm picturing, like, a very King's Landing-esque city.
100%.
With, like, 100%. This broken stone obelisk just floating above the harbor.
And people are coming to see it.
Everybody, yeah. Like, in this world that has just, like, a hobby is coming to fucking look at
this
thing.
I gotta know.
Like, everybody wants to do a bunch of studies. Uh-huh. Everybody, like, and so, well, the way it starts is they get a telegram from the Fulcrum saying, hold in place, remain at location.
Which is weird for them.
It is.
They're like, why? Wait, we did our job.
We should go back.
Yeah.
And we find out later when we go on a walk, Alabaster tells Cyanide, I think that they want you to stay here because you can control this thing.
And that you're not supposed to be able to do that.
But that's not what he says here in the beginning. What he says in the beginning is, I mean, it makes sense they'd want you to stay here, you know? Like, there's probably going to be a ton of people that want to ask you questions.
He's bullshitting, but...
yeah, and so, like, they're just...
And he does warn her, too.
Yeah.
Like... Like, no mention-y that you can do this, like, that you can connect with the obelisk.
He said that
there's
like,
gonna be questions.
Some time has passed by this point, like a few weeks have passed. But yeah, he did say that.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, don't talk about the fact that you can connect to obelisks. Don't even fucking bring that up. Just say that you just, you know, moved the silt and the thing just shot up like a cork.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, was kind of true. Like, I think that if she had approached it differently, it wouldn't have like sucked her mind into it,
right?
You know, but like the way that she was approaching it, it just kind of naturally happened because the obelisk was there and she didn't realize the obelisk was there,
right? You know? And she can connect with those,
yes, because of Alabaster,
right?
It's Alabaster's fault. Alabaster got her started on this because he had to just quell a giant shake that node maintainer caused,
right?
So. Well, anyways, they're so casual about fucking.
I was going to say the same thing because, too, like, I think, like, she's pissed off now.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, you want to go masturbate and feel better? And she's just like, fuck you.
But also privately, yes, yeah. But I'm not going to fucking admit that.
Right. She doesn't. She's
like, do you want me to go? Do you want me? He's like, do you want me to go on a walk?
And she's like. Yes and no.
I'm going to go on a walk.
And he's
like, fine, I'm going with you. And she's like, I didn't ask you to come with me. And he's like, no, you didn't. But since somebody's already tried to kill one of us, I don't think you should go walking around alone. And she's like,
touche.
Fuck, you're right. And she's still kind of thinking about, like, if Asael did this.
Yeah.
She's like, man, that was real fucking stupid. If that had killed him, this whole city probably would have been destroyed.
Right.
You know? So they start going on this walk, and it's just a nice afternoon. And so this is why I'm thinking, like, I don't think Asael's treatment of her is representative of this whole city.
Yeah, because nobody's, like, stopping and, like, yelling things at
nobody's
them.
Nobody's stopping to stare at them.
Yeah, you're right.
Nobody's stopping to yell at them. In fact, there's one old couple or something that waves at them as they walk by. And she's like, nobody would ever fucking stop and wave at me in Humaness. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And so this is what makes me think, like, maybe, like, I think it's interesting. Like, I'm thinking about earlier, right? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about one of the Aesun chapters. I'm thinking about when she destroyed that little rinky-dink town because, like, just in pure anger and hatred, she's just like, it's this fucking town.
Yeah.
It's not just my husband, it's this town, you know? And I'm thinking about that here, and it's like, I don't think it is this town. I think it's just that one.
Right.
You know?
I was starting to think, like, Isun then.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's all of them.
It's all of them. It's all of them. They're all fucking horrible. And it's like, you know, there's a lot of racism in the world. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of hatred. That's true. But maybe Aaliyah's not so bad.
Yeah.
Maybe. But, well, anyways, yeah, no, so they're going on this walk, and they're looking at the obelisk, and they're talking about the obelisk.
It's making them feel kind of funny, a little uneasy.
So it's doing this weird pulse thing, yeah. Right? And yeah. Cyanide realizes that only they can feel this pulse, mm-hmm. because if other people could feel this pulse, they would not be calm, because, like, the pulse feels like a throbbing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's irregular, like... The impression I got was, like, maybe this is, like, the obelisk's heartbeat, right? Like, maybe this thing's dying
but
or something.
But it's not, like, a beat, though.
It's, no. Right?
It's, like, random.
It's, yeah. It's random. It's, like, a random throb mm-hmm. that just she can sess. They can both right. sess. And I think it's Alabaster that says it's dying.
Yeah, it is Alabaster who says that.
He says that it's dying. And he says that they want us to stay here because you can control that thing.
And that makes you even more dangerous than they ever suspected.
Yeah, because not once in 3,000 years has any origine moved an obelisk. Granted, yeah. There's never been an obelisk in the ground. They're usually at cloud level.
Yeah, floating around.
Or higher than cloud yeah. level, you know? Like, the biggest reason why this is such a big fucking deal, other than the fact it was in the ground, is that it's still floating really fucking low.
Yeah.
It's, like, when I say it's floating above the harbor, I mean it's, like, above the harbor.
Like a few feet is what I've been picturing.
It's not yeah. very high up. Like, it's really close, and it makes people uneasy because, like, not everybody's freaking out, but, you know, Cyanide can see that some people are uneasy that this thing is here, and yeah. they don't want to look at it.
Right.
Right? And then Alabaster's like, when he's talking about how it's dying, he's like, it's listening a little bit to the south, too. She's like, what? And he's like, don't look at it.
Don't look that way, but also
fucking don't do it. And
they're like going on this walk, they're talking about things because they're hoping they're like out of earshot here, like who could be listening in, kind of.
And he talks about why he was worried about them listening in the hotel room, doesn't
right.
he?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yes,
they talked about that because the central pillar of the building, because all of their buildings have like a central pillar,
right,
is made out of granite. It's made out of a material that someone could listen to them through. And Zyna, it's like, that's not possible. I'm noticing a trend here.
Yeah.
I'm noticing Cyanide and Aesun have both said, that's not possible. And someone that knows a little more is like, yes, it is.
Hold my beer. Let me tell you why, because I can do it.
Yeah. No, he's like, around the seventh or eighth ring, it's something that you can learn to do once you have that amount of control. You can sense vibrations of people's voices through the earth.
Yep.
It's like, what he's the always... fuck? Just, can this guy fucking hear anything somebody's saying in the city? Like,
yeah.
What the fuck? How powerful is this guy? Is this fucking Superman or what?
He's always spilling the tea. Like, I'll do. Like, he's like, I got some hot goss. Let me just spill the tea.
Like, Jesus Christ. So, yeah, he's like, I think it's safe to talk about it here. And that's the only reason I'm talking about it here. I'm not going to talk about this shit again. And so she's like thinking about just like they're having this conversation, and I forget exactly mm-hmm. what happens, but she has a realization about Alabaster's kids, but like she does, like it's not explicitly spelled out for us,
mm-hmm.
right? Like his children have the potential to become Ten Ringers.
Yeah,
like many of my children have that potential, and
too powerful though they never will.
He's the only Ten Ringer that yeah. exists right now.
Yeah, most of my children have the potential to be Ten Ringers, but there are no other Ten Ringers in the Fulcrum.
Mm-hmm.
Raga children are sent to the nodes only if they can't control themselves, aren't they?
Oh.
No.
And then she does not mention her realization, because of course Alabaster would know what happened to his children. He's probably not ignorant to the fact that more than one of his children is a node maintainer right now.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, what the fuck? Wait a minute. Hold on. Why the fuck are they making this guy give birth to so many kids to just make them into node maintainers?
I know.
Is it because just because they're more powerful? That's a more powerful node maintainer?
It's like they just maybe want... They don't want someone with his power out in the world doing God knows what they think, you know. They want to be able to control it. They want that power. They just want to be the ones who are pulling the strings. So that is giving them absolutely zero autonomy.
I wonder if, like, he wasn't ever supposed to become a Ten Ringer.
That's an interesting thought, yeah.
You know, like, since they have him, they're going to take advantage of it because they're fucking evil. But because they fear these people, mm-hmm. like, they can't allow any more to happen.
Right.
They just want more powerful node maintainers. Rather than just, like, making him celibate or just never sending a breeder his way at the mm-hmm. very least. You know?
Yeah.
Ugh, it's so fucked.
It's so fucked. And it brings us into the Guardian conversation, yeah. kind of. Like, who's really calling the shots here?
Yeah.
And I mentioned this, I think, a little earlier. Because I had started to really start thinking about this, too. I'm like, who's in charge here? Who's in charge of the Guardians?
Because she's thinking about senior Origine politics.
Right.
Because she's going to become a senior one day, so she uh-huh. wants to be up on that. But the Guardians aren't a part of those politics, and they do not, like, they're not receptive to inquiries.
Mm-mm.
Right? They're like, no, like, the Guardians don't answer to anyone. And she's like, who do the Guardians answer to? Like what is going on here? And then
of the Guardians.
She notices this mm-hmm. guy, this really hot guy, sitting on the railing at the pier with his shirt off, taking in the evening sun, staring at her. And it kind of makes her feel a certain way
mm-hmm.
because, like, no one's looked at her like that in a while. And, like, it's not like sex with Alabaster's that great.
Yeah. And then she's like, oh, wait.
Fuck.
That's a Guardian.
Yeah. And she's like, is that one yours? And he was like, I was hoping it was yours.
Yep. And they start walking up, and Alabaster says something really weird. He's like, don't let this Guardian touch you.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay. Why?
So, yeah.
But, yeah,
he whispers.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let him touch you with his bare skin. And so Alabaster just walks right up to him like, what's up, Guardian? Like, something on your mind?
He's like, great job with the obelisk over there.
You did such a great job. If only you had just done what you were supposed to do.
Yeah.
They did their job too well, right? Like, because... You know, like, I think as far as the Fulcrum's concerned, it's like, you should have just crushed the coral, man. Right. That's what they hired you to do. You did more than you were supposed to do.
Why'd you?
And now look at this. Now look at you. And so he assumed that Alabaster did this.
Right.
It's like, fuck you, man. Like, you're always doing this shit.
But our girl is like, wait.
Actually, it was me.
I did it. I moved it.
And then we learn a little bit more about how Guardian's powers work.
Yeah.
Because, like, he just, like, glares at her, and he can feel his gaze poke her strata.
Mm-hmm.
And then she can't sense anything past a few feet.
Well, but doesn't she? She feels Alabaster's, like, power go into the earth. Like, he's prepping for a rumble.
She feels that.
Yeah.
But that's before, I think, he does that thing to her. Before the...
Right, before he looks.
Edkey.
Mm-hmm.
Edkey. Guardian warrant. And I wonder about that. Like, what's warrant? It's not a place.
I wonder, is he like, like a bot? Like, you know, people who go and... take them to jail, like catch them that break bonds.
They do talk about like how there's like a specialization of guardian. There's like guardians that are like so weird that the fulcrum enhances their weirdness or something.
Yeah.
And those ones don't get any charges. They don't get any grits that they watch over. They are, I mean, it doesn't say it outright, but like I interpreted it as, oh, they are made into like assassins or something. Right.
So he's doing something.
Because that's what guardians can do. They can just look at you and dampen your powers.
Yeah.
And she's like wandering around and she's like, shit, is this what it's like to be normal? This fucking sucks. And it's like, she doesn't even know, right? Like, because no, that's not what it's like to be normal. Because I'll tell you what, like, I can't cess 5 feet below me, cyanide, okay?
I never will. Yeah. Well, then we see a knife.
Yeah, so he throws a glass knife at her.
Edkey does.
Edkey, yeah, throws a glass knife at her, an alabaster, you know, very chivalrous.
Yeah, I love him.
Just, like, tackles her, takes the knife blow, and Edkey's like, you fool! You fell for it! Why do you think I threw the knife at her, stupid?
oh my god. And this is no ordinary knife wound. It paralyzes him.
Yeah, well, I mean, depending on where you get hit with a knife, it could paralyze you.
Okay, but this is a very powerful man.
It's a glass knife, which, and it's spelled like one word, you know? And so, yeah, something about the glass knife. I think you're right. I think there is something special about it. And he's, like, preparing to throw one at her or something. Like, he's going towards her. And it's so, this is where it gets weird, right?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of weird stuff happens here. Like, everything about this feels wrong to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, did you, like, are you all right? Mm-hmm. And he stops and smiles and is like, ever polite until the end. And, words.
Well, he connects.
Hold on. Chris did research.
A glass knife, one word, is a knife with a blade made of glass with a fracture line forming an extremely sharp cutting edge. So it's actually fractured specifically to make the edge sharper.
Okay.
A glass knife is it's straight up a weapon.
A super sharp knife.
It is a super duper fucking sharp knife.
Okay.
Okay. Crazy sharp. Okay. Thank you, sound guy.
Perfect.
Chris. I don't know how much of that picked up, but he did some research, and glass knives are a real thing, and they're fucking dangerous.
They are.
Yeah. So, she asks him, are you all right? And he pauses, like, ever polite until the end, and, like, still keeps coming at her. And so she's, like, she's desperate, right? So she's, like, she just reaches for something, anything. And instead of reaching into the ground like she would normally, because that's not available to her anymore, she reaches, she describes it as sideways. She reaches into the obelisk.
Yep.
And that's a bad idea because it's a broken obelisk. She reaches for its power and she sees when she's no longer in her body and not aware of anything, she's terrified that this guy's going to stab her with a glass knife, but, like, she wouldn't feel it or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And she asks, the Stone Eater, are you all right?
I love this part.
Go ahead.
He said, I'm fine. Thank you for asking. Right?
Yeah.
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 And then the entire obelisk, boom, shatters again. So, like, you can just see it in your mind.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And that's the end of the chapter.
Yeah.
And there was no ending passage in this chapter.
No.
That's just how it ends.
And then the obelisk shatters. It's good. This was a great chapter.
It was a great chapter. Like, top-notch writing.
Ugh.
Genuinely. So good. Well, anyways, that's the end of the episode. I mean, that's the end of what we're going to cover this episode.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Just loving it.
It's all good. It's all good. I like the cyanide chapters.
I mean, I like all of them. I think cyanide is probably my favorite at this point. Just like in terms of what's going on, I have the most questions. I'm still like, I hear your theory about the stone eaters being obelisks.
Yeah.
And I have questions. I have questions about the guardians. Like,
I would call it a hypothesis.
Yeah.
Theory is proven.
Okay. Your hypothesis.
I have another hypothesis.
Let's hear
that
it.
I mean, you've already heard this one.
Oh, okay.
I think, so I have two now, right? Yeah. We've got the obelisks are stone eaters.
Yeah.
Right? Ho is totally a stone eater. Nobody can tell me otherwise.
Ho is
that isn't even a hypothesis.
That's
like,
for sure.
I feel like that was spelled out pretty explicitly in the prologue.
Yeah.
But then also that all three of these characters are the same person at different points in time. I really do think that's the case.
Yes.
Well, anyways, it's so good. It's just so good.
I love it.
And also, I guess there's also another one. I'm pretty sure the guy that destroyed the world was Alabaster. I feel like
that's what's that up.
Yeah.
For him. Good. That man's been through the ringer.
Okay. Next time, we're gonna cover chapters 15 through 17.
Yeah, we are.
That's gonna be a fun one because I don't have good notes for that. So I'm gonna just be operating totally on that.
We got this.
We got this. All right. Bye, guys. Bye-bye. See you in a couple weeks.